The bishop can only move diagonally. The knight can only move in the shape of an L or a 7. The rooks can only move horizontally or vertically. The king can only move one square at a time in any direction. But the queen can move any amount of squares in any direction. So that's why it's considered the most powerful piece.
I didn't know that at all.
Hi, welcome back to the I Did Not Know That podcast. In this episode, I have with me FIDE master Justin Blackman from the island of Barbados. If you don't know what a FIDE master is, then this is the right episode for you. Justin is teaching me all about the rules of chess, who governs the game, and what are some of the mental and emotional benefits of playing. We talk a lot about diversity and inclusion in chess, as well as some of the new variations like Blitz, which sounds like a lot of fun. Stick around to the end to find out how Justin got introduced to chess and what his goals are for the future.
So, hi everyone. Today I have a friend of mine. I don't know if to call him a good friend yet because we just met like less than a year ago. But I have with me today Justin Blackman. Justin is from Barbados. And I met him when we started our MBA at the SA Business School in the summer or fall of 2022. But Justin and I, you know, we were in the same section together, which was like a subgroup of students within the MBA. And in introducing ourselves on the first day of class, Justin wasn't there. So when he did come to school, everybody had already researched him because he wasn't in class on the first day. I like along the way of researching this person, we found out that he is like this super chess master or something. And so since then, I knew that I wanted to talk to him about that, right? My only experience with chess has been growing up. I had, you know, those little portable chess boards that everybody has where you have like snake and ladders and checkers on one side and chess on the other side. And then in the last few years, my little brother actually got into chess and he started playing and playing tournaments and he was pretty good. But even though he was doing this, I wasn't around him. I was abroad and I didn't really get an opportunity to learn from him, but I have Justin with me. So Justin, maybe you could introduce yourself a little bit. You know, let us get to know you and then we could start talking about chess.
Okay, no problem. So as you said, my name is Justin Blackman from Barbados. I lived there for most of my life. That's also where I learned to play chess. However, my father lives in the U.S., so I spent a lot of time growing up in New York City. Spent a lot of time playing chess in the parks there. And I primarily learned to play chess at school, and then I just continue to teach myself and, you know, try to grow because I love and enjoy the game. And yeah, that's a little bit about me. More personally, I guess, one of the things I love to do, I love to cook, I love to bake, I love water sports. And professionally, I was a data scientist for the last 5 years. And now, you know, I'm here studying at ESA doing my MBA.
Cool. So you said you learned chess in school first. Is that like, that Yep. was like your first introduction? Okay. So was it like an extracurricular activity or one of those after school clubs or something?
I think in a lot of schools, it was an extracurricular activity. However, at my school, it was a part of the curriculum. So we actually did chess every Friday. We alternated with art. So, you know, you have art this Friday, chess next Friday, art the next Friday, and so on and so forth. So yeah, it wasn't something that was optional. So we all learned to play. Wow. And then a few of us went on to actually compete competitively. Yeah.
Wow, that is very interesting. Do you want to share what school that was? And do they still do this? Maybe there's some parents who want their kids to go to that.
Well, yes, I went to school at St. Cyprian's Boys School in Barbados. To my knowledge, they still have a chess program. But chess has been pushing to become part of curriculum of many schools, not just in Barbados, but across the world. It's big in Europe, in the US, the UK, for example. They have a huge chess in schools program because many educational professionals have realized that the importance chess plays in the development of kids and the learning in different areas, that they want to see chess being played more in the schools, even if the kids do not decide to go on to compete at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in the primary level, and then many continue to the secondary level. A lot of secondary schools have chess programs. And then it's around there that many stop as they go to college, but many continue to take it on. So yeah, we're seeing today more and more programs, even in elementary. I think in the past it was just in the secondary schools, but now it's even backtracking to the primary schools. So I'm really happy to see that.
That is that's cool. And so you talked about you know, the importance of it in a sense, because it pulls on many different skills, or I guess it maybe helps you develop certain skills. Like, can you share some of those things that you feel like some of those core skills that you either need to use or need to learn to excel at chess or to play, at least? Yeah.
Sure. So I think that for many chess players, you would realize that a lot of them have very good memories because in chess, there's a lot of pattern recognition. There's, you know, what we call variations that you have to memorize. It helps you to get an advantage in the game. So one good thing is to have a good memory. Now, I don't think that is a prerequisite to have a good memory. Even if you have not the best memory, you will see that chess will help you to develop and get a better memory. So, for example, when I stopped playing competitively for about 5-6 years, when I, you know, went on to do my bachelor's and my first master's, I saw a drastic decrease in my memory during that time. And then when I started to replay again in 2017, I saw that my memory started to increase again. So it really, you really feel the difference. And then the second thing I would say is, you know, managing your emotions. Chess can be very trying with your emotions. And I don't really think that's something that's chess specific. I think that's just with any competition, you know, coming second place, just barely missing out a win. The really learning how to manage those emotions is really important, especially at a young age where kids are very emotional. They haven't developed certain behaviors. So it really helps you to control all of those aspects. And then the last thing I would say is problem solving. I mean, in the end, chess can be seen as just a puzzle. So when every time you sit down at the chessboard, this is a new puzzle for you to solve. And, you know, you can take those skills and apply it to math, computer science, you know, any other field, because you're getting practice, you know, solving this problem every time you sit down to play.
So that's cool. I think, like, after this call, I will have to, like, actually try to play. You know, maybe you could try to teach me. I feel like I have a good handle on my emotions. My memory is like so-so, and the problem solving probably somewhere in the middle there as well. You talked a little bit about coming in second place, right? Now, chess is a game like you know, any other game. So maybe you could tell us a bit about the rules that govern chess.
Okay, so the overarching body that manages chess is called FIDE. It stands for the Fédération Internationale des Échecs, which is the French name of the overall body. And they're the ones who, for as long as I've been playing chess, they set all the rules. They set tournament guidelines, how many games can be in a tournament, what may be, for example, the structure for what is rated, how to get master titles, how to get master norms. They really govern everything chess. They also are the ones who create the world events. So, for example, the Chess Olympics, the Chess World Cup, all of these things this organization manages on a daily and yearly basis. In terms of the structure of tournaments and stuff like this, most tournaments are 9 rounds. This is what you call your for classical chess, which is a standard time control of 90 minutes in a 30-second increment. For faster time controls, they have more rounds. So, for example, for Blitz, they may have as many as 18 rounds. So you might be playing 9 games per day. This is becoming more and more common. But I wouldn't say there's any standard way, because, for example, how Europe conducts tournaments, for example, they tend to have one round a day. But in the US, they might tend to have 2 or 3 rounds per day. So a lot of there is some creativity that's left up to the individual country or the individual region on how they want to design their tournaments to best suit their players. So, for example, here in Barcelona, there's one round a day on evenings. That's really good because it means that people who work, they can come after work and play chess. Maybe students who go to school can, after school or after camp or something, they can come and play chess. But for example, in other regions, you may have to take a day off. You may have to take multiple days off in order to play a chess tournament. So there is some differences across the world.
Something you mentioned prompted one of my questions. You talked about like every region and every country could determine, you know, what is best for them. In some sports, you are restricted at certain points to play only within a particular region. Is that the case with chess, or as a player, can you compete anywhere in the world, no matter where you come from?
So I would say the World Chess Federation, they put in place of a structure. For example, if you want the games to be rated internationally, you need to have 9 games, a minimum of 9 games. You need to have a minimum motor rest days. They set the skeleton. Now, how you interchange those pieces is up to the local organization. There are some tournaments that are restricted. So, for example, I could not play the European Chess Championship because I am not a European citizen. I'm from Barbados. Okay. So I could not play, for example, the U.S. Chess Championship because I'm not American. So there are some tournaments that will be restricted to certain nationalities, especially when they are dependent on qualification for international events. So, for example, the European Chess Championship, I think the first couple of spots, they qualify for the Chess World Cup, and they have these different qualification events all across the world. So only their citizens can get that qualification spot to go forward in Europe. So if I wanted to qualify for the World Cup, I would need to go back to the Caribbean and play one of those qualification events in order to qualify for the World Cup. There are some restrictions. Yeah.
Okay, understood. All right, so we talked a bit about, you know, the overall governance of the game, but for me, I know there is a queen, I know there's a knight, I know they have the little ones in front with the little round head, right? yeah, the pawns, right? There's a king, what else? Like, tell us about what are the different pieces, you know, how is the game structured? Is it 14 by 40? Like how, you know, give us a little bit about the mechanics of the game itself. I know I could have Googled this, right? But I would love to hear it.
No, it's no problem. So chess is played on an 8x8 board, so 64 squares. Each pawn has 16 pieces, so 8 pawns. And then you have your king and your queen, 2 bishops, 2 knights, and 2 rooks. I think the important
what
thing
What was the
here,
last one?
The 2 rooks.
Two knights and two rooks?
Yes, rooks. So R-O-O-K-S, rooks. So some people call them castles, but because they look like towers of a castle.
Yeah.
I think the important thing is for many people get intimidated because there's a lot of pieces, they move in different directions. Some can hop, some can't hop, all these different things. But I think what they will learn is that learning how to move the pieces is can be done very quickly, especially because there's so many resources today compared to when I would have learned, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So once, and chess is one of those things that once you learn it, the more you learn, the more you want to learn. It's also one of those things, you know, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And that's kind of like the intriguing aspect of it. So I would say don't be intimidated. It's not as complex as most people think. A lot of it is, as I said, pattern recognition, memorization, then there with a little bit of creativity. But yeah, and in terms of the mechanics, you know, the, for example, the queen is considered the most powerful piece. Well, I should say that the each piece also has points. So, for example, the pawn is 1 point.
I did not know that.
Yeah. The bishop and the knight are both worth 3 points. The rooks are worth 5 points. The queen is 9. And the king, people, I mean, there's really no assigned point value, but people would say the whole game. Because once you checkmate the king, it's how you win, you know, that's it. So that's why we say it's worth the whole game.
So hold on. The queen is the most powerful, but the game ends when the king is dead? Is that what happens?
True. But the queen, people say, is the most powerful. Because, for example, the bishop can only move diagonally. The knight can only move in the shape of an L or a 7. The rooks can only move horizontally or vertically. The king can only move 1 square at a time in any direction. But the queen can move any amount of squares in any direction. So that's why it's considered the most powerful piece. It doesn't have as many limitations as the other pieces. So in that regard, even it is the most valuable, and it also is considered the most powerful.
If only that would be applied to real life as well, that there would be no limits on women. But yeah, that's another conversation. So in something that you said earlier, you talked about the FIDE, the associating governing body of chess that awards things like titles and stuff. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about those titles. I understand that as you progress in the game and win enough tournaments and stuff, you get like different rankings. Maybe you could summarize for us the main rankings and then tell us about where you are on these rankings right now.
So the ranking, well, you like everything else, you start at 0 and you go to as high as 2800. The former world champion, Magnus Carlsen, he has the highest recorded ranking. I think it's around 2873, 2880, somewhere around that region. So that's the basis on how the ELO, the scale works. Now, there's several titles. So there's the Grandmaster title, which is the highest title that any player can achieve. There's the second level, which is the International Master title. Then there's the FIDE Master title, which I have. Then there's the Candidate Master title, which is the lowest title that you can obtain as a master. They also have the same titles equivalent for women. So there's the Women Grandmaster title, the Women International Master, and so on. Yes, women can also get the, for example, a woman can get a FIDE master title, or she can get a woman FIDE master title. So women have that option of being able to obtain both. In terms of correlating the ratings to the titles, generally someone who is a candidate master is around 2100 ELO rating points. FIDE Master is around 23. International Master is around 24. And Grandmaster is 25. And that's by design. For example, in order to get the Grandmaster title, you need to obtain what is called norms. So imagine there are tickets, you collect them. So you need 3 norms, and your rating must pass 2500 to get the Grandmaster title. So that's why the titles are correlated. Now, beyond Grandmaster, there's a special type of grandmaster. It's not an official title, but you would hear people refer to a super grandmaster. These are people who have reached the level of 2700 and above. Again, there's just about 100 players or so that are in the world that have reached this ranking. And then the final title is world champion. Of course, this is a huge process that is undergone every 2 years, with many qualification events across the world. And then eventually someone will get to play the world championship to fight for the title. So yeah, that's a little bit about the rankings, all the titles in chess. All of them are issued by the world governing body FIDE. And you know, you obtain them by playing tournaments that have one of the prizes as a title, or for example, you need to get a certain amount of points. I gained my FIDE master title at the Olympics, so you needed to get 6 out of 9 and or 60%. 67%.
Six out of nine wins?
Yeah, so 6 out of 9 games, you need to obtain 6 points.
Okay.
Or 67%. So the Olympics is actually 11 rounds, and I think I scored around 8.5, which was more than enough for me to qualify for the FIDE Master title. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Many years in the working hard to get there. This is a perfect example of why chess can be so emotional, because I obtained my FIDE Master title in 2018, and it had been maybe 10 years of trying. And it was not just 10 years of trying. It was 10 years of being a half point short, 1 point short, coming around to the last game in the tournament. And this is where, you know, the competitive aspect, it really, you know, pulls on your emotions, because, you know, when you try something and you keep, you know, missing it by such small percentages, you know, there's this feeling that you want to give up, you just want to stop. And this is how chess, in a way, trains you to not just in all of those scientific aspects like your memory and stuff, but even the emotional, the EQ aspects as well.
Yeah. Good for you, Justin. So since you've been at the NBA for about 9-10 months now, and you talked about, you know, when you stopped a little bit when you were in undergrad and studying before. So, you know, how does that work for you then? Are you going to continue competing, for example? You know, do you want to reach like grandmaster level or above? What is in the cards for you that you think you will pursue when it comes to chess?
Chess is something that I've been playing, as I said, for 20 years. It's something that I truly enjoy, and I really don't want to stop again. Even if I don't play super great or competitive, I still want to enjoy the game and have fun with it. So during the NBA, I think for the first 5 months or so, I did not participate or do anything chess-wise. And that's mainly because you're moving to a different country. You're trying to navigate everything, including the language. You are getting settled, looking for apartments, getting, you know, ESA, you know, keeping up with the work, doing the, you know, getting the immigration stuff handled. So I didn't really have the time to really focus on chess, to study chess, to play chess, anything. However, starting this year, I did reach out to a few chess clubs here in Barcelona. And I actually joined one, and I started back playing again. So I would have played a few rapid tournaments, which is a different time control. I think one in February, where my club, we actually qualified for the finals here in Barcelona, which was held in April. I also played in the Catalan League, which was played between February and I think May. It was a couple of tournaments. You know, that was my, like, for example, that's something that I've never done before, play a tournament that has lasted a couple of months. That was definitely new for me. So I also played those tournaments. And I want to continue to play. One important point is that Europe is considered, like, you know, this almost like the center of chess. So, you know, I mean, there are other places in the world where many people, you know, go to play chess, but many people across the world converge onto Europe to play chess. Why? Because there's many different tournaments every week, every month, and it's a great opportunity to come, play, and improve drastically your rating, get titles and stuff like that. So, you know, this is a rare opportunity for me to come to Europe and play and try to improve. And while my first priority is to do the MBA, I don't want to miss out on such a unique opportunity. So yeah, I definitely plan to continue. My goal over the MBA was to upgrade my title to the International Master title and get one step closer to someday hopefully becoming a Grandmaster. Because at the moment... Okay. There's only one person from the Caribbean who has ever become a grandmaster. So all of us are fighting to change that. Many of us are fighting to get there, to be second person.
That's good. I guess, you know, if we could maybe spend a few minutes just maybe talking about what you have seen in terms of, you talked about this, right? There's only one Caribbean person that made it to the top there at some point. You know, how have you seen, I guess, chess evolve from when you started to now in terms of diversity, in terms of gender? I know, like, the Queen's Gambit on Netflix was, like, you know, a thing when it came out. I still haven't seen it yet, but it was, I think it was, you know, like a game changer for a lot of people and maybe a lot of girls who didn't get exposed to chess when they were younger. So what have you seen in terms of a diverse representation in chess and also the encouragement, I guess, for girls to play if they haven't before? You know, when I was growing up, mainly boys played chess. Like, I didn't know any girls that played. And so what have you seen?
So... I see. Well, one, chess is definitely going through a boom right now. I think the Queen's Gambit led a revolution of chess interests. I mean, for me, it's so strange to be on the bus or the train every day and I see people on their phones playing chess. I mean, this is something that is quite new for me. We're now having chess on TV. You know, chess is now, you know, I was watching a chess tournament. Chess is getting 100,000 people watching this chess tournament to play. This is completely new for chess. Chess has never seen this. And, you know, there are people like me who are, you know, so excited, so happy to see so many people love and enjoy chess. You know, I have so many friends asking me questions because you're seeing chess on the front page of the Financial Times. This is something that is unprecedented, and I'm loving it. I'm definitely loving it. Chess has been making a move to incorporate all types of people in terms of diversity, not just in terms of race, but even people with special needs. So we just recently had, you know, a young man who is completely disabled just became an international master, which was a huge, you know, accomplishment. There's chess for the blind. There's now chess in prisons. There's the chess is going everywhere. There's a Women in Chess Commission. You know, chess is, we really want this to be a sport that there should be nothing that should stop you. I've had experience playing against blind people in the Olympics. I've played against deaf people. And they might need a little bit of assistance where they have someone who sits with them just to tell them what's happening. But, you know, it's really giving them the opportunity to play. And let me tell you, they're very good. There are many that are way better than me. So a disability, a physical disability may not necessarily be, you know, stop you from being better at chess. So I'm really liking that. I think for women in particular, I there's been a push to get more women playing, especially at the highest levels. I think many women, they play as juniors, they play in secondary school, but they might stop to take to begin a family or something like this, and then they may never come back. So, there's a lot of push trying to make sure that, they provide an environment that women can play chess and continue to play chess for their entire life, that they don't feel like they need to stop or they don't have the resources to continue playing. I would say I agree with you. When I was younger, it was very rare to see a woman play. And now is so common to see many women playing all over the world.
Well, I love to hear that. And I feel like from this conversation alone, it seems like chess is probably ahead of the game in terms of inclusion. Love to see that, it's open and it's the same game that somebody with a physical disability might play versus somebody, in some other sports where there's Special Olympics versus regular Olympics. It's great to hear that everybody could be included in one tournament. That's great. And I guess chess is one of those sports where there's no talking, right? There's no communication. So even language barriers isn't an issue. You just play the game that you guys love so much. So that's really nice to hear.
Yes, in the diverse aspect, what I love is this whole chess in prison program, using chess to rehabilitate people, teach them different skills. I really love that. This is big in the UK. It's also becoming, they just had the first prison chess championship, I think, in the United States. And as I said, and as you said, I really love that they're showing that anybody can play chess and nothing should stop you from being able to play it.
That's lovely. Well, I do hope that some of our listeners maybe take this as an opportunity to learn, like myself. I promise I will try at least once, and maybe I would like it just as much as I like checkers, but let's not go there. I can play checkers. It was on the other side of the board, and that it was more straightforward. Yeah. Anyway, let's not get sidetracked. So I have a question for you. One of my favorite shows is Big Bang Theory, and in it, Sheldon, one of the main characters, he created something called three-person chess that had a funny looking board, and he also made three-dimensional chess where you could jump different levels and stuff. Was that just a thing in the show, or has there been different innovations in chess to find other ways to play the game?
Oh yes, definitely. So I think that's one of the things that's also attracting many people to chess. I think for the last, I don't want maybe 50 years, chess had been a standard game. And then over the last 5 to 10 years, they have been introducing, different organizations have been introducing what we call chess variants. So there is chess 960, where the position can be set up in 960 different ways. That's where it gets its name from. So, and you can play the chess tournament and you do not know which position is going to come. So you just show up and you just have to play whatever the computer spits out as the position you play. There's also Bug House Chess, which is actually played with 4 people. This is very popular among kids. Kids love Bug House because it's fun. You're passing the pieces from yourself to your opponent, and you're passing back and forth, and you're playing with the time. A lot of kids really love Bug House. And then there's some very popular variants coming out now. There's King of the Hill, there's Crazy Chess, there's something called Hand and Brain, where you play with a teammate. The one teammate serves as the hand, and the other teammate seems as the brain. So the brain would say, for example, knight, and the hand would have to look at the chessboard and figure out, okay, which knight which square they want to move because they're trying to figure out what the brain is thinking. So you want the two people working together in order to win the game. So every year there's always a new exciting variant of chess. There's also different puzzle games. Like the more popular one is Puzzle Rush, where you can race someone to solve puzzles in chess. So yeah, every year I think for me that I'm looking forward to see what's going to be the new quote unquote chess hype variant that everyone is just like so excited to play.
Well, that's cool. Maybe we could play the head and hand and brain one. And brain. Yeah. But after I get a few wins in and I know, you know, where to send things. Yeah, maybe after that. Yeah. We're coming down to the end of the episode now. So Justin, I guess all of this information, super interesting and super helpful, I think. And this is with like having very, very basic understanding or knowledge of chess. What I'm like super excited about is to go on vacation again. There was a hotel I stayed at once. They had like the life-size chess board. And I really, really wanted to play, but I had no idea what to do. So I think I will learn to play chess for that so I could go on vacation and play with the giant chess board. But I guess if someone wanted to learn, right, if I leave this call today and I say, all right, let me go and learn some basics and start to get into chess, how would you encourage somebody to do that? Where should they go? What should they do? Maybe what should they read? Any advice?
So the first thing I would say is just take it one step at a time. Don't be intimidated, you know, and enjoy the process. Don't get frustrated. I think a lot of people, they come in with these preconceived notions of it being so complex and stuff like this, and they already getting stressed before they even start to learn. So just like anything else, just keep an open mind, go, you know, play and learn and have fun. So I would say to start, you know, I would divide it in two aspects, whether it's online or offline. For offline, an easy way is to visit a local chess club. Many countries, there are many chess clubs, you know, on every block. That is a great way to start. Another great ways to go to the parks. You know, when I grew up, I remember just my family just taking me to watch people play chess in the park, learning from them, playing in the park. So just visiting the chess park, watching people play, interacting with people, you will be surprised at how many people are willing to sit with you, teach you how to play chess, you know, and you may meet someone, you'll meet a new friend or something like this. So again, local chess clubs, your chess parks, you know, any local chess boxes is what I would use. In terms of the online media, I always recommend, you know, two websites for kids. There's chesskids.com, which is a site that is, you know, safe and secure way for kids to learn how to play chess, you know, maybe meet other kids and play chess. Another recommendation would also be chess.com. It's considered the number one chess site in the world. You know, the free version alone already provides so many resources for you to teach you how to move the pieces, how to think in chess. So chess.com, chesskids.com, I think are, you know, two perfect resources for you to learn how to play chess. The books is a little bit more tricky because I feel like when I was learning, you know, books were a huge part of chess. And now, not as much. So, you know, unfortunately, I can't really think of a good beginner book because the online resources are what chess media has been trending towards. For example, mm-hmm. I was just speaking to a friend yesterday and I was saying when I played my first Olympics and you wanted to see games, you would go and you would get this stack of paper that would have all the games being played in the Olympics. And you would have to look there and flip through all the papers to find your opponent's game and all this stuff. And now today you just go online. It takes 2 seconds. And I remember the days of sitting down to 9 and 10 o'clock waiting for these books to be printed so that you can get a copy of the games. And now in a few hours, it's uploaded online and you go and learn. So yeah, I would say if you want to go to your local bookshop, like for instance in the US, Barnes & Noble or something, many of them have chess books, chess beginner books. That would be a great place to start. But I think that the online ecosystem is more than perfect enough for learning how to play. Another option is just YouTube. You know, there's a lot of chess streamers, chess YouTubers who have videos on how to play chess, how pieces move. So if you prefer to watch rather than read, that is a perfect way to also learn chess.
Thank you. Very, very helpful. I have no excuses. None whatsoever. Right.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right, Justin. This was an actual amazing conversation. I didn't expect to have this much fun talking about chess. So it's been great. Before we go, is there anything else you want to share with us? Maybe something we didn't touch on, something that you think is important, or maybe just any final words from you?
Well, I would say, like, you know, I hope that this conversation inspired more people to play chess. The thing I want people to know is that there's no limits, there's no age limits, there's no time limit. You know, you can learn to play chess as young as, you know, a few years, you know, to, you know, as old as, you know, your 80s, 90s. It doesn't matter. Just start whenever you can. The other thing that I want to emphasize is many people look at chess as just a board game, but it's really important to remind people that chess is a sport. Many people who play professionally, they have a whole set of programs to be able to play chess, you know, properly and play chess well, like nutritionists, physical trainers, stuff like this. Because, for example, you know, the average chess game can be anywhere from 4 to 6 hours. I personally have had chess games that has been as long as 7 and 8 hours. And you need to be mentally prepared. You need to be physically prepared for those long, grueling battles. So as much as chess is a complex game, it is very much a sport. So you also need to take care of your mind and your body to become a really good chess player. So I just wanted to mention that because that's something that we always want to educate people on chess, not just being a game, but being a sport. Sometimes to get better has nothing to do with chess, but it has more to about taking care of yourself. So I think that will be the note that I end on today.
I will say nothing else after that. Just let that sink in. Thank you very much, Justin. This was amazing. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and I hope everyone listening to this also has a great rest of the day. Thank you.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something new and maybe found something you'd like to do. Don't forget to share this episode with someone else who could benefit from hearing about it. You can also engage with us on social media, and you can find all links on our website. See you at the next one.